line drive to the gap. That'll score two more.
Salvi unloaded.
So make it a five-run second inning.
Hey, the Royals scored five in one inning and then scored zero in the other eight. But, hey, they still scored five and they won last night. Royals win 5-4 in San Diego, almost blew it, got down to 5-4. Brady Singer improves at 3-4, gave up four runs, just two earned. And the Royals are now 13-31, snap a four-game losing streak. They finished the three-game series with the Padres 3-10 this afternoon. Carlos Hernandez will get the start. And Matt Cotrero on the early support for Brady Singer.
For us to get some runs on the board early tonight was key. You know, we feel good when Brady's on the mound. We knew we had a rested bullpen, so to get the lead early and to play from the in front was really a nice thing for us.
All right, the Royals are 13-31. How many games will the Royals lose this year? Before the season, I forgot your prediction. Mine was, I think, 74-88 or 75-87. I was more optimistic. I know I had the highest amount of wins of you, me, and Jason. Not by a lot, but I think we're all around 70-75.
I'm pretty sure I had 72 wins.
Okay, 72. Obviously, yeah. I think we're changing our predictions here.
Yes.
So how many games do you think the Royals are going to lose, which requires you to figure out how many they're going to win? 162 games.
I don't think they're going to avoid 100.
I agree with you.
They'd have to have a heck of a run. I'm gonna say 104 losses.
That's exactly what I'm going to say. 58-104.
Yeah.
58-104. That's what we're saying. They're on pace the other day to be 46-116.
Yeah. So I mean, I think they'll hit somewhere where they win. Sure. You know, they had a stretch there where they won 4-5 or 4-6 or whatever it was. I think they're going to extend
on. They won
on,
five out of six and then just lost four in a row after
four
that.
In a row, yeah. But I think they're going to hit a stretch where they'll get a good run.
Every team
maybe like 12 out of 20 or something like that, you know, that's going to help their record a little bit. And,
right.
You know, something of that nature.
So
I just cross my fingers, I guess.
Yeah,
I
always like to avoid
being optimistic for no reason at all now.
It's pretty sad when your team, your biggest thing you're cheering for is for your team to avoid 100 losses.
Yeah.
By the way, this was thrown out there the other day. The Royals were almost no hit against the Padres in game one of that series. The Royals had no hits through the first seven innings. And I've seen this question. I think it's easy answer for me, but apparently it's tough for some people. So you're a Royals fan, but the Royals are going nowhere. And the Royals are being no-hit through seven innings. You got two answers and two answers only. You got to pick one out of two. As a Royals fan, or any sports fan for that matter, but let's just focus on the Royals. As a Royals fan the other night, were you pulling for the Royals to break up the no-no at any way possible? Or were you actually like, you know, the Royals aren't going to go anywhere. It'd be kind of cool to see a no-hitter and cheering for a no-hitter. For me, it's easy. I want the no-hitter broken up by my team. I don't want to be no-hit. But yet, somehow this became a big, serious conversation in Kansas City Sports Talk about people saying that they actually would want – some people are saying they would want to be no-hit because we're not any good. And I'm like, well, then you're not a true fan.
That just adds to how bad your team is, right? You just keep piling on with how bad they are.
You want them to be no-hit.
I don't want them to be that bad.
To me, that's the equivalent of cheering for your college team to lose because you don't like the coach.
Yeah, it should be just in your blood as a fan to not want your team to fail in the worst way possible in a single game.
To me, what that tells...
Perfect game would be the worst way, but
right.
No walks or anything. Like, you didn't even get anything, but...
What that tells me is that those that actually are cool with the Royals being no hit aren't diehard, true blue Royal fans, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They're fans, but they're not diehards, or it just simply they become so indifferent they don't care anymore, which means they're not real fans anymore either.
That's definitely part of it, but again, I've always said I'm not gonna openly cheer for my team to lose or do bad, right? Like, that's just not...
Well, let me ask you this. So when the Chiefs were 2-14, and I said this before, the Chiefs, Romeo Crennel as their interim coach, beat the Packers, who were undefeated, I think, at 13-0, coming in Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I was cheering big for the Chiefs, and I remember people talking at the time going, we don't want the Chiefs to win, we want to tank. We want to get the number one pick. Yay, congrats, Eric Fisher. He wasn't the franchise quarterback. It worked out for the Chiefs down the line. But... Like, for instance, we're going to talk about the NBA draft lottery. Your Spurs get lucky again, which you start to wonder about this whole league thing. But were you cheering for the Spurs to lose this year?
No.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
I understood what they were doing.
Right, but you tune in to watch them. You're not cheering for them to lose to get the number one pick. You're actually still trying for them to win, right? You're watching the Spurs, and you're cheering for them to win, even though you know they're going nowhere.
Yeah.
That's my point. Real fans are still going to cheer for their team to win. If you get to the point where you're hoping your team loses, you're not a fan, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, there have been, like last year when I was talking to you about it, does the Spurs no good to make it into that play-in?
Right.
Then there's certain times where it's, like, in my mind where this doesn't do you any good to win this game, to make it here, and then maybe you win more, and now you put yourself out of the lottery, and now you're into the you're further down. And so there's things that go through your mind. Am I openly cheering for them to lose if they play in that play-in game, though? No, I'm not.
Okay, well, let me go one step further, but backwards just a moment. So the Spurs get to the last game of the season, and they have to win to get in the play-in tournament, or they lose, and then they've got the chance to get the number one pick, but they'd have slim chances because of the percentages.
Yeah.
Are you cheering for the Spurs
to
win that?
The exact situation last season.
Okay. Yeah, right. But are you cheering for your team to win that game to get in the play-in tournament, or are you actually cheering for the team to lose so they're not in the play-in tournament, so they're in the lottery?
For me, I'm
cheering for them to win because I want them to win every game. Yeah. If the Chiefs are 0-16, I don't want them to go 0-17. If the Royals, I don't want them to lose 100 games. And I don't care if the Orioles and the Royals and the A's both at the end of the year, they play each other and they both have 110 losses and they're playing for the number one draft pick. I don't care. I'm cheering for the Royals to win, especially in baseball, because it's like, dude, it's a crapshoot. Now, I guess if the NBA, you're playing you and the other worst team in the NBA are playing the final game of the season to determine who gets the number one pick, and it's going to be LeBron James or Victor Wembanyama, maybe you are cheering for your team.
Well, when you've already tanked the season in that situation and you have just this one more spot better to get the number one pick, when it's already all over, I'm not sitting here going to say I'm cheering for him to lose.
But you're not bothered.
But I'm not like, and that's the same situation I was in last year with that 10 spot, right? To maybe get a chance to play one game to try to get in to the playoffs, to get to the play-in tournament, and then you have to win to get to the playoffs. So I'm sitting here thinking like last year, not pick number 9 or 10 or whatever it may be is going to be way better than 16 if we make it to the playoffs, right?
Right.
And so last year I wasn't openly, I would say, cheering for them to lose, but that didn't them no good to win. Like in my mind, it's like they're not going anywhere. Even if they get into the play-in tournament, this team is not built to make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so when you understand that and know that, then you kind of go on the other side of that. Well, what helps us in the future? Because this isn't it this year.
Right.
And so, but I'm not ever like the fully supporting a full tank mode type deal.
You're not watching that game, Sam. Please miss this free throw so we lose.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, it doesn't do you any good in your development to continue to be stuck at the 10 spot, right? And so it's just like, hey, keep, get better players so now you can move up and you don't have to worry about this play-in thing. And so, there's all kinds of things there, but I don't ever really, I'm not going to say that I'm openly ever cheering for my team to lose. Like,
it just
doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's how I feel too, but I guess other people are different, which I think that means they're not really diehards, but I could be wrong. All right, one more baseball note before we get to regional results, and then we're going to hear from Tyler Odle, the Beloit Lady Trojan softball coach. The attendance Monday night at the Oakland A's Arizona D-backs game at the Oakland Coliseum, you want to take a guess what the attendance was?
Like 1,000?
2,064.
I knew they'd been getting like 2,000 something at some home games.
I believe they've got an afternoon game today. It might be worse.
Yeah.
It's the smallest crowd for an A's game in 44 years. The same night down the road from Oakland to San Diego, the Padres and Royals was a sellout, 43,828 people. And the Padres are under 500, and the Royals are bad. So, how about that? All right, local sports, Dusty.
Regional. We'll start with baseball yesterday, then we'll get into softball because that feeds into today. There was one team still playing yesterday from the immediate area. So when Lucas Lincoln ended up losing in the first round to Ellsworth there yesterday in the 3A Hoisington Regional. That game was actually in Heston. Ellsworth won 12-2. So when Lucas Lincoln finishing their year at 10-11, Ellsworth will move on to take on Heston and Hoisington today at 2 o'clock in the semifinals. regionals there in baseball. You can find full baseball brackets and softball brackets for regionals at ncksports.com. Sylvan Lucas Wilson softball team saw their season come to a close yesterday as well at 2-1 in that was in Solana, 6-5 loss to Bennington for Sylvan Lucas Wilson as they finish at 8-13. They actually played all the way out through the semifinals, so the championship will be in Ellis today. El Saline taking on TMP at 5 o'clock this evening. 3A in Concordia is where the Beloit Trojans are playing. They had a first-round bye. Yesterday's quarterfinals, Riley County winning over Plainville Stockton 12-2. Minneapolis beat Russell Victoria 12-2, and Marysville upset Concordia. Concordia had beaten them by 9 runs in the 2 regular season games, but Marysville won last night 3-1 to get into the semifinals and put an end to Concordia's season. So that's a look at what happened there yesterday, which leads into today's semifinals. Beloit, again, the number one seed, had a first-round bye, so that goes on their record. They're 18-3. And taking on Riley County, who is 8-13, but they have played a very good schedule this year. That'll be at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And then the other semifinal is number 2 seed Minneapolis against 6 seed Marysville, 25 minutes after Beloit and Riley County finish. And then 25 minutes after that second semifinal will be the championship today in Concordia. Beloit, obviously, as the number 1 seed with the best record there at the tournament and have beaten Minneapolis a couple times. He's the number 2 seed, so they're looking pretty good and a chance to make it to the state tournament for the second time in program history. And we talked to Coach Tyler Odell about his team's chances and the way they stack up with the three other teams that are remaining.
I think we match up well with everybody, you know, and I think probably one of, you know, the biggest concerns for us is just beating ourselves. We're you know, we don't want to make excuses, but we are young, and a lot of our players have never been to regionals. You know, it's just a different feeling. You normally get that feeling that if you lose, you're done, right? So, you know, that adds a little pressure, and so we've got to make sure our minds are right and that we just play, you know, fundamental softball and keep it simple and go out and execute.
Kimball, it will start with Riley County this afternoon, 2 o'clock first pitch there at Concordia for semifinals of that 3A softball regional. Again, you can find all the brackets and all the information at ncksports.com for softball and baseball regionals.
You know, we've talked about this before. Sometimes it's not your best team that makes state. And a lot of it has to depend on your draw.
Mm-hmm.
And Beloit's had to be in some tough regionals in the past where they've had really good teams, softball teams, run into a Hoisington or whoever it might be and then lose heartbreakers or tough games. And then this year, I don't think anybody will deny that this team's a good team, but they're not as good as some of those other teams that didn't make state. But they're the number one seed and they got a more favorable regional. And
absolutely.
So now it's a matter of taking advantage of it.
Yeah, like he said, execute, take care of business, and go out and play your game. And if you do that, you should be able to get through and make it to state next week.
Well, they say be good enough a long period of time to where you're always knocking on door, you'll eventually break through. That's what they say with KU. You know, you get those one seeds, and eventually you're going to break through and get to the Final Four and win a title if you keep doing that year in and year out. You know, if you keep winning the division title in baseball, you're eventually going to break through and, you know, get to the World Series. Or, I mean, you think so. It doesn't always work out that way. But the kind of the same thing applies here too. So best of luck to our area athletes and teams if they're still alive going into the final parts of the year here in the high school sports season. And most of the schools will be done by the end of this week, but there is regional track and field tomorrow and Friday.
Yep, regional track tomorrow. I'll be up in Mankato and doing updates from there, and then also Smith Center will be up at Valley Heights. All of our 1A schools from the area are Mankato tomorrow at Rock Hill. So and then Smith Center's at Valley Heights. I'll have results that I can get off the internet and funnel those through when I'm doing reports as well. And then Friday, Beloit will be at the Nickerson 3A Regional. So we'll have updates from that as well coming up on Friday.
All right. Sounds good. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about the ACC and their situation with maybe possible realignments and people leaving the NBA draft lottery. Dusty's just giddy because the NBA's rigged. and KU picks up a familiar name in NBA playoffs. Western Conference Finals Game 1 last night, won by the Nuggets.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
K K-State baseball team, 32-20 overall, 12-9 in conference play, third place in conference. They lost 2 out of 3 to Oklahoma State and Stillwater, including the last two, won the opener of that series. And they have a big series coming up, and they've been very good at home this year, 18-6, their home record. And they'll take on TCU, and that's a 3-game set. And Senior Day coming up on Saturday. They'll play tomorrow. Let's see, what's the game time on that one? 6 o'clock tomorrow night against TCU, Friday at 6 o'clock, and then on Saturday at 2 o'clock. So if you want to see K-State baseball at home, this is your last opportunity to do so. And then the Big 12 tournament begins next week on Wednesday and goes through Sunday at the brand-new ballpark there in Arlington, Texas, home of the Texas Rangers. K-State made it to the semifinals last year. The Big 12 conference tournament surprised some people, so we'll see if they can do that again. Might not be as big a surprise, and K-State's still trying to, you know, work their way in and make sure that they make the NCAA tournament. It's been a great year for K-State athletics, and that's one of the reasons why Chris Kleiman's getting a $44 million contract extension. If you missed that, 8 years, $44 million, $5.5 million per year, makes him the third highest paid coach in the Big 12 football fraternity behind Mike Gundy and Brent Venables. And it is a contract that will take him through 2030, but there is a lesser buyout if Gene Taylor is not the athletic director at any point in time during Kleiman's tenure the rest of the way through 2020 on the current deal. So K-State, the reigning Big 12 champions in Big 12 football, Chris Kleiman getting awarded for what he's accomplished here since taking over as head coach for K-State. Our focus on K-State athletics brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Keontae Johnson is more than likely going to keep his name in the draft, but he's trying to get some various things cleared medically. Of course, with his situation, he's at Florida. There is an outside chance that he could come back to Kansas State. So something to keep an eye on, I guess, if he doesn't get the reports that he wants to hear. But I think he will probably be all right and stay in the draft. But it's something to consider, I guess. You never know. Some weird things happen. Brandon Rush was going pro and tore his ACL, and next thing you know, he's back, and KU won a national championship. And, you know, if he doesn't tear his ACL, I don't think Kansas wins a title in 08.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with that.
You know, some things are blessing in disguises, depending on who you are. I don't know if Brandon Rush thought that was a blessing in disguise at the time, but we shall see. Speaking of KU, KU's men's basketball team picked up a forward with a familiar name yesterday, Parker Brown. The brother of former Jayhawk and current Nuggets guard Christian Brown is transferring to KU. Brown spent his first 2 years at Mizzou, but had been in Santa Clara the last 2 years. He averaged almost 8 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists with Santa Clara this past season. So KU continues to revamp and restock their roster.
Jokic bringing it up the floor, throws it ahead. Porter fakes, sidestep, three-pointer. In and out, Jokic, another rebound, and the putback. He's got 10 rebounds already.
Nikola Jokic had a double-double in the first half. He had a triple-double after 3 quarters. He finishes with 34 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists, hit a 30-foot three at the beat the buzzer with AD in his face. It was incredible to end the third quarter. The Nuggets were up by as many as 21 in this game. The Lakers battled all the way back, cut it to 3, and I thought for a moment, can you imagine how deflating this would be for the Nuggets? You're at home, you have a 21-point lead, Jamal Murray's playing well, Jokic has been insane, you're making 50% of your threes and you lose?
Yeah.
And they almost did.
Yeah.
But they did win, 132-126, so the Nuggets, that lead was cut to 3 with under 3 minutes to go, but made enough plays. Anthony Davis had a great game for the Lakers, 40 points and 10 rebounds. So game two will be tomorrow night in Denver. Nuggets up 1-0. This is the fourth time the Nuggets and Lakers have played in the Western Conference Finals in NBA history. First 3-1 by the Lakers. And every one of those series, the team that won game one won the series, and that was the Lakers. Nuggets won game one last night. Nuggets have never been to the NBA Finals. Never.
Yeah.
I think they're one of 6 NBA teams that's never been to the Finals. So
that was the only hesitation I had about picking them to go to the finals, because I'm, you know me, I'm always like, let me see it before I believe it, right?
Yeah.
But this team is just, I mean, like I said, I've said it so many times, if they play right, it's going to be hard for anybody to beat them in 7.
I do have a concern, though. I was watching the game last night, and the Lakers made a lineup change, and they started to come back and get in the game. And that was, they took AD off of Jokic, and then they put Rio Hachimura on Jokic, and that allowed AD to kind of be playing center field near the bucket. Takes away driving lanes for the Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's ways to counter-adjust to that, and the Nuggets, I'm sure, will. But if the Nuggets don't, I would be concerned about that, because if AD then, because he can guard on the perimeter some for a center, if he is able to be ready to help off of Aaron Gordon, then Jokic can't get to where he wants to get on the floor if Hachimura can at least hold him at bay for a little bit. And next thing you know, here comes AD with help. And there was a play where he came over and blocked a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the game kind of turned when the Lakers went to that lineup. And so, you know, Lakers did a heck of a job at the trade deadline to find the right pieces to finally, you know, support LeBron. Never made sense having Russell Westbrook. Never, ever, ever made sense. Never understood that at all. Now they have guys that really make sense around LeBron and AD, and really the bigger key is AD and LeBron staying healthy, especially AD. And so I do have a concern or two because the Nuggets played really well offensively last night. They shot almost 50% from three. I think they were 15 of 32 from three. They hit their free throws. Jokic was insane. Murray was terrific. But that they barely won at home. Now, Mike Malone said after the game, listen, our defense was not good. They shot 66% in the third quarter. Or fourth quarter. He's like, we got to play better defense. So it's going to be interesting. Game one is kind of a feeling out game. But teams that win game one are in much better position to win a series than if they lose game one. The Nuggets did win game one last night. The Lakers have won game one the previous two series of these playoffs. Nuggets are still undefeated at home. Lakers are undefeated at home too, by the way. So could we see everybody just hold serve until a game seven in Denver? Possible. So I think there's some things you can take if the Lakers. I don't think the Lakers are freaking out at all. I think they're going,
oh no,
dude, we didn't even play that well. AD had a big game. They wasted AD's big game. Austin Reeves played well. But the Lakers got to be sitting there going, we can be better defensively. And these guys are making threes, aren't going to make 15 out of 32 the next game. So, and the Nuggets can say, well, the Lakers aren't going to score 126 because we're going to play better defense. So it's a feeling out process, but I do think this is going to be a long series. I don't think it's going to be in five or four. I think it's going to be, did you pick five yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally disagree with you on that one. I think it's going to go at least six, if not seven. I don't see, as long as LeBron and AD stay healthy. Now, if one of them gets hurt, five sounds pretty right. But if those two are healthy, I don't see how the Nuggets win the series in five. I really don't.
Yeah. Did you watch the game last night? Yeah, I did. They mm-hmm. do need to adjust. They can't start games like they did last night. They were letting Jokic do whatever the hell he
right.
wanted, basically.
Well, and that's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. They made the change in the fourth quarter. Jokic scored 2 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they've got to keep that adjustment on because, they just literally let him dictate everything at the beginning. And that's not – I mean, I don't know why you would go into a game like that. Like, you've got to take him out. You can't let him run things early. And if they wouldn't have done that, they'd have probably been in the game and not had to fight back from so far down. I mean, it was bad. Like
that was bad, but the Nuggets also were bad too and allowed the Lakers to come back because they let LeBron go one-on-one against Jamal Murray and they switched everything and they didn't double LeBron.
Yeah.
So LeBron just backed up Murray to 2 feet from the bucket and scored. I mean, so, you know, you're right. They let Jokic do whatever he kind of wanted, but the Nuggets let LeBron do whatever he wanted there for a while and that allowed the Lakers to get in the game. So I think both teams have to
there's some
take
adjustments
that away.
And things that you need to understand defensively that maybe worked for you that didn't work for you. Like you said, it's kind of a feeling out game.
But right.
I don't know that that's the way I would have started the game if I was the Lakers, just to kind of, I mean, I got to put pressure on that guy early, I think, but, and not let him get into the flow of a game.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just dominating whatever. I mean, he literally did whatever he wanted to do in the first quarter.
Yeah. Well, first three quarters, he had a great game.
For
but the
sure,
fourth
the
quarter.
First, I mean, he had 12 rebounds in the first quarter.
Right.
And it's like, man, you're going to have to figure something out here.
Yeah. Well,
and
I think they did.
Yeah.
And so we'll see that there'll be all kinds
but
of adjustments, counter adjustments.
Make, you know, you just never know how that's going to play out.
Every game there's adjustments, and the coaching staff that makes the best adjustments usually wins when they're two evenly matched teams. And the Nuggets, I think, are the best team. They're the more complete team. But when you take LeBron, you have LeBron and AD, and then Reeves is playing well, suddenly Lakers are right there. And then they can play defense. The Lakers can play defense. The Nuggets, at times, don't. I mean, they can. I've seen it. But at times, they don't. And I think Aaron Gordon's still going to be maybe a key to whether the Nuggets win or lose
the
series.
Oh, absolutely. I think Aaron Gordon's going to be a huge key to that.
Because
they're
going to lay off of him and make him make some shots, and then that's going to pack it down on Jokic, which I was surprised they didn't start that way last night.
Yeah. And so like it is. There's guys that are going to have to step up. There's no question for this team for Denver, and they've been able to do it, really, in a lot of the games throughout the playoffs so far, and so we'll see if that can carry over.
Eastern Conference Finals begin tonight in Boston. The Heat and the Celtics tip off at 7:30 on TNT. I got the Celtics in seven, just like last year. That's my prediction. What do you got?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people think it's going to be a quick series. I don't think so unless Butler gets hurt.
Yeah, I'll say Celtics in six just to be different.
Celtics in six?
Yeah, just to be different. But
okay.
Yeah.
The 76ers will have a new head coach. They fired Doc Rivers yesterday. Sixers knocked out of the playoffs in the conference semis for the third straight season. Rivers went 154-80 in his three seasons in Philly. Now, isn't this crazy? The three best winning percentages in the NBA over the past three seasons are the Phoenix Suns, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Philadelphia 76ers. And the head coaches of the three best teams the last 3 years have all been fired in the last 12 days.
Yeah.
Usually when you're one of the three best teams over 3 years, you keep your job. Mike Budenholzer fired by the Bucks, which based on how he ran things in the playoffs, I totally understand that one. Monty Williams of the Suns, I think he's just simply the scapegoat. That's the Suns. There are a lot of people in upper management. The Suns did not want to make the Kevin Durant trade because they felt they were going to give up way too much, but the owner vetoed him. That's why the owner should let his people handle things. And the owner didn't, and the Suns are going to pay for this for a while. I don't know who their head coach is going to be. Monty Williams is a heck of a coach, and if he wants a coach, he'll have a job somewhere. I can assure you of that. They said maybe even the 76ers. And Doc Rivers, you know, people give him a lot of static because he's lost 10 Game 7s, but that means you have to get the Game 7 to lose a Game 7. And he's 6-10 in Game 7, so he has won some Game 7s. That's not a great percentage. I get it. They've blown leads, 3-1 leads with the Clippers, 3-2 lead with the Sixers. I get it. But Doc Rivers has won a championship as an NBA coach. He has a really good record, has the 6th most wins all time of an NBA coach. You can't be a dunce and win 1,097 games in NBA. You just can't be a dunce. So just like Ned Yost wasn't a dunce, as everybody talked about. So, you know, Doc Rivers will get a job somewhere if he wants it, more than likely. I think Budenholzer will, too. Monty Williams will. Nick Nurse is available. This is crazy. Just a few years ago, the Raptors won a title. Nurse has been fired. So Nurse is going to get a job somewhere. Monty Williams and Mike Budenholzer are playing each other in the finals just a couple years ago. They're both unemployed. And Doc Rivers, you know, just got hired a few years ago, and all they did was win. They went from 49 wins to 51 wins to 54 wins and got better each and every year. So, and then what's James Harden going to do for the Sixers? Is he going to opt out of $35.5 million, or is he going to opt back in? Who are the Sixers going to hire as a head coach? And somebody said Mike D'Antoni was one that, Daryl Morey is the GM of the Sixers, used to be with the Rockets, and D'Antoni was coach of the Rockets, and he's coached Harden before, and this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't think Embiid's going to go work out well in a fast-paced right. type of offense. That's not going to work. So if D'Antoni becomes the head coach, that might allow you to keep Harden, but I think that's not going to help Joel Embiid. That's just my two cents. I don't believe, this was a question that was posed out there the other day, do you think Joel Embiid will ever win an NBA championship? Now, he obviously could latch on to another franchise later on in his career and get one, but if he stays in Philly, I don't unless Philly makes some drastic changes, and it's going to take some time to kind of reload. I don't see Joel Embiid. I think his body will break down. I mean, he gets hurt a lot. He's been healthier the last few years, don't get me wrong, but he usually misses 10, 15 games a year. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see Embiid winning a championship as the centerpiece.
Yeah, I don't see it in Philly.
Yeah, I don't see
like
it in Philly.
Like, maybe if he would, for some reason, just demand a trade and get out and go somewhere else.
And be the second guy, not the top guy.
And could be, like, a co-centerpiece, like right. like a LeBron-Kyrie kind of situation.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
You know, one guy's better than the other, you think, but yeah. But cause the other dude could just take over whenever he wants sometimes, right?
Right.
And so, I just, in Philly, I don't think, let's just put it this way, I don't think Joel Embiid is James Harden, right? Like, I don't think that
he's
having him on your team is going to be like, nah, he can't win because it's Joel Embiid.
I agree.
Yeah, James Harden is that because there's a history of,
yes.
Does he put the right effort into it sometimes
right.
And things like that. And I don't think that's the case with Joel Embiid, but it just is, I think it's just kind of you're going to get that rap if you don't do it eventually. And so that becomes part of you, like I was talking about the other day. It becomes part of you if you can't get it done, and then it just follows you everywhere you go. And so, you know, I'd be interested to see how it all plays out. But if he stays in Philly, no, I don't see him winning there.
Right. No, I agree with you. And I saw this the other day, too. And we talk about how there's a small room for error in sports. I've talked about it before in regards to, you know, if Memphis makes a free throw or two, Bill Self maybe isn't the head coach at KU today, back in 08. We can go through all kinds of examples. championship teams have caught breaks here and there. I mean, if Sky Moore doesn't return a punt in near midfield against the Bengals, did the Chiefs actually win the AFC title game this year? Mm-hmm. Now we can go on, you know, on and on about, you know, Wasp in the Super Bowl against the Niners, or if that holding isn't called against the Eagles, did the Eagles go down and score? They would have had time to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl back in February. It's very small, the margin of error, the difference between winning and losing. And I saw this the other day, and I wish I would have retweeted it. I don't think I did. But remember a few years ago when the Bucks won the championship, it was a Game 7. It was Nets hosting the Bucks. Kevin Durant hit at what appeared to be a three to take the lead with just a few seconds left. His foot was on the line, and he wears shoes that are a size bigger than his foot size. Had his foot not been on that line, the Nets would have went to the NBA Finals, I believe. The Bucks would have been eliminated. And if the Nets go on to win the championship, nobody's saying Irving and Durant, and that doesn't work.
Yeah.
People, Budenholzer's probably fired before this year.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis is probably the new Joel Embiid. Well, you know, he's great, but can he win a title type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it changes, or the Suns end up beating the Nets because they don't play the Bucks, and Monty Williams still has a job today. It is amazing how the length of your foot, your shoe size, that's the difference between maybe one team changing the whole narrative on the experiment with Kyrie and Kevin Durant
and
what people think about Giannis, right? Giannis is a whole different light because he won a title and he was MVP and he was dominant. And they were down 2-0 in that series. You know, you go back, you talked about Harden. You don't feel good that anybody's going to win a championship with Harden. If Chris Paul does not get hurt against the Warriors,
yeah,
we might be talking differently of James Harden.
Absolutely.
You know, they'd be in NBA Finals. If Kevin Durant and the Thunder and Westbrook don't blow a 3-1 lead against the Warriors, does Durant go to Golden State if the Thunder end up winning that series? So
Probably not.
Yeah. So it's just amazing how things could be different.
Well, and that's the KD's another one of those guys, right? Like, if he doesn't go to Golden State, he might have the same reputation that James Harden does.
And that
right?
is
like
never winning a title.
If he stays in, because he's not done it before or after Golden State, right? Like, he's had opportunities, but it hasn't happened. And I know part of that on the back end has been some injury issues and things like that. But yeah, it does. It changes the narrative, you know, for Kyrie and Durant if he makes a three instead of a two, and that is a game ender instead of sending the game to overtime, right?
Yeah.
With his big foot on the line. So, it is. It is. It's a matter of centimeters sometimes, not even just inches. Like, it can be millimeters sometimes if you have a big foot like Kevin Durant, right? Like, that can make a difference and change just so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, but, you know, there's the greats that have just said, I don't care about your inches and centimeters or whatever it is. This is where I shine.
Right.
And, you know, Jordan would be a guy like that. You know, Patrick Mahomes is obviously putting himself in a position to be that kind of guy where it doesn't come down to inches for me. I'm just better than you.
Right.
And so that's when you get the mentality and you have that reputation of, okay, well, this guy's a dude. LeBron is that guy now, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you're in a situation where you want to win a game, you want LeBron to be in game 7 for you.
Absolutely.
And so there's just, you know, reputations can be good and bad. It's just, it's all based on what we've seen so far, right? Like, and until you break through, that's just probably going to be the knock on you.
Speaking of game 7s, that's why I don't want the Nuggets series to go 7, because I don't care where the game is. I will bet the money on LeBron James. I said this back when the Cavs were down 3-1 to the Warriors, and people called me crazy. And I said, you better close it out in game 5 or 6, because if you go to a game 7, you're going to lose, because the Cavs got the best player in the world, LeBron James, in his prime at the time. And, oh, yeah, Kyrie Irving wasn't bad either. And I remember I had a couple of people tell me, so you think the Warriors could lose two games at home, the next two games at home to the Cavaliers? You think that could happen? I said, yes, I do. I do, because if you lose the one, now all the pressure in the world's on you at home to win game 7. And LeBron is the best player in the world. I mean, if you got a winner take all game, I don't care what the sport is. If you got the best player, that's a huge advantage. And I know AD's a great player. I know Jokic is a great player. But Jokic hasn't had to do that in game 7. like you said, believe you're going to see it.
Yeah.
We've seen LeBron come through in game sevens. And then, yes, they've lost game sevens before, too. But he, if you have a winner-take-all game seven in Denver, I'm probably picking the Lakers. So that's why I picked the Nuggets in six, because if it goes seven, I'm not saying the Lakers are automatic winners in game seven, but, man, been there, done that, the experience, all the pressures on the Nuggets, they'd be at home with Jokic, and then the narrative will be LeBron's still greater than Jokic because at 38 he could win on Denver's floor in a game seven. So I'm cheering for the Nuggets to win, but I think they got to win it in six if they're going to win this series.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that situation. I'm not going to like write them off if they do play in a game seven at home, but you know, you would not want to be in that situation, I don't think, if you're Denver.
No, I mean, obviously it's nice to be at home instead of on the road, but what can negate that is the other team has the best player. And we saw that in 2016. All right, the NBA draft lottery, the Pistons, the Rockets, Spurs each had a 14% chance to get the top pick. But after the Pistons were at number 5 and the Rockets number 4 last night, the Spurs were left with the best chance. And they landed the number 1 pick for the third time in franchise history. 7'5" French center Victor Wembanyama is expected to be the number 1 pick. He isn't expected. He will be the number 1 pick, unless something happens to him. The other top picks belong to the Hornets at 2. The Blazers got number 3. The draft will be held in Brooklyn on June 23rd. One of the great things I saw on social media last night, Rue Pub in San Antonio promised their customers free drinks if the Spurs got the number 1 pick. And they did. They got the number 1 pick. So free drinks for everybody at Rue Pub there in San Antonio. Now, I'm not saying it's rigged, but I do want to throw this out there. I have always thought the draft lottery is a complete and utter hoax. And this is not new. I've said this before. I think the NBA draft lottery is a complete and utter, I think it's just like any game show. It can easily be rigged. I'm still not convinced Wheel of Fortune is legitimate. I'm not. I mean, you don't think they can somehow slowly slow that wheel down and control whether you barely get bankrupt or not because they don't want somebody to win $40,000? Come on. And the other, you know, Price is Right, I don't know how many games of Price is Right could easily be rigged. I don't think game shows are that hard to rig. I really don't.
No, probably not.
I mean, you know, Jeopardy would be maybe harder to rig, but the game shows that involve chance. Like, listen, Deal or No Deal to me is the ultimate easiest rigged game ever. Yeah. Ever, in my opinion. So now you got ping pong balls and even lotteries can't. I want to say lotteries aren't rigged per se because you don't know who holds what numbers, okay? But in this case, I've always thought the NBA draft lottery could easily be rigged. So easily. Now, I don't know if it has been. I don't know if it has been or was last night, but I think it could be easily manipulated. That doesn't mean it is. I'm just saying I think it can be. I have a lot of other people that agree with me on that, and they think it's kind of silly what they do with this whole thing. And I do think it's ridiculous that a team that's the 13th worst team has a chance to get the one. I think that's a joke. Mm-hmm. I do. Now, you may say, well, that prevents teams from tanking. No, it doesn't. The Spurs tanked. The Rockets tanked. The Pistons all tanked. Well, see, tanking doesn't pay off. No, it did for the Spurs. It didn't for the Pistons. But it did for the Spurs.
Yeah, the Pistons were the ultimate tank.
Right.
And it didn't pay off for them, right?
And everybody could, you know, if you have more than one team that tanks, it won't pay off. If you're trying to get the, you know, number one player who's clearly the best player that has come out since LeBron James. So NBA is more important to, you know, baseball, you can tank. And you could have five teams tank in baseball, and you could get, you know, five great players, you know, because it's more of a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
There's not always a clear-cut number one player in the world.
Whoever you pick in baseball is not typically going to be on your team right away.
But the NFL, can you tank to get a big-time quarterback prospect? Yes, you can. The NFL is like that. But the NBA, more than any sport, is the ultimate way to tank. But they put in the lottery system to try to, you know, maybe teams won't tank as much, and yet they still do. And so I think it is ridiculous that now the Spurs had one of the best chances to get the number one pick. Okay, they did a good job of tanking, as did the Rockets and the Pistons. And, you know, it was a crapshoot between those three. But we've seen it before where teams, well, David Robinson and the Spurs, I don't know what the percentage chances were at that time.
They were actually, the two times that they won the number one seed, they were not like favorites to do
right.
so.
Right? Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
And they didn't tank either. That was
right.
a whole different situation
right.
where they had injuries. And,
right.
and interestingly
right.
enough, Robinson was the one that got hurt right. when they got Tim Duncan. Right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They
the Celtics were supposed to have the pick when they got Tim Duncan.
They shouldn't have got that pick. Is yeah. my point yeah. is they weren't number one or two worst team in the NBA. And so if you have 14 teams in this lottery like they do, and you have a 1.2% chance, like, well, I'll give you the example. Oklahoma City Thunder were the 13th, or I believe 12th or 13th. If oh, and I'm sitting here hoping they get the number one pick. Well, that'd
oh,
be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm going, if they do, it's wrong. It's wrong. A team that's that made the playoff, well, the play-in tournament, I guess. They technically won a game and then technically weren't in the playoffs, which is confusing. But they had an all-NBA first-team player. A team like that shouldn't get the number one pick, okay? Now, the Spurs, they had a 14% chance, as did the Rockets and Pistons. So it's maybe not as bad as it may appear as other years when the Spurs have gotten it. But this is the third time now, and I'm sitting here going, well, if it's rigged, what's the thinking behind it? Because San Antonio is not a huge TV market. So if you want to rig it, you would make sure that a major market team did, right?
Which would be Houston and Detroit way before San Antonio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that I fight against the argument it's rigged. That's why I say I think it could be rigged, but I'm not saying it is. That's see the difference that I'm saying here? I'm saying it could easily be manipulated and rigged, but I don't think it is. But I can understand people thinking it is. But the logic behind it is, what, the Mecca of Texas is San Antonio? Like, Houston's a bigger market.
Yeah.
Like you said, Detroit's a bigger market. If you had a New York team in there, which you didn't have the Brooklyn, were the Nets in it?
I don't think so.
They made the playoffs.
Well, and then they've got some issues with picks that they've traded that I don't even know if they'd have a chance to be in it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. Well, actually, wasn't it the Knicks? Oh, yeah.
If the Mavericks
had a pick, but now they don't because it ended up being the 11th or 10th or whatever.
Dallas got 10, and if it was 10 or higher, they kept the pick. Dallas,
right.
That's why they lost the last game.
Right.
And
so
if
the
it
Knicks
was
11th
or 14, the Knicks would have got that pick.
Right. But if the Knicks had been, say, if you're thinking about it being rigged, the Knicks be like the Thunder, 1.5% chance of getting number one pick, major media market. And the Knicks get the number one pick, then I would tell you I'm convinced it's rigged. Because that's the biggest market they want to. L.A., New York, obviously Boston. It'd be one of those markets where the NBA would be like, yeah, we want that superstar there. And, you know, Zion went to the Pelicans, and that wasn't ideal for the NBA.
No.
So I don't think it is rigged. I'm just saying I think it could easily be rigged. And then how do the Spurs get this thing three times? I mean, are they the luckiest people on earth? Like, Popovich now is like, oh, I was thinking about retiring. Well, I'll put retirement off for a while now.
Yeah, well, in the end, you got to do it right. The Cavs had it like three times in a much smaller
yes.
span than the Spurs have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously LeBron was
got
part
LeBron.
Of that. And then Kyrie was one of them, right? I think I don't remember who their first picks were. LeBron was one, and then they got it a couple times when kind of like the Spurs got it when they got Duncan, right? They weren't really expected
right.
to get that number one pick. They messed one up. Anthony Bennett was one of them that they picked.
Yes.
A clear-cut number one pick, so that didn't work out for him. But there was like three times the Cavs have gotten it in a fairly short amount of time
yeah.
compared to what normal teams would get it three times. Like, we're going all the way back to the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
the first time the Spurs had it. So this is not like it's happening
oh, yeah.
all the time.
Right.
But it does seem like they obviously get lucky to have the number one pick when they get the number one pick to get David Robinson and Tim
right.
Duncan, two Hall of Famers. And this guy's like mm-hmm. generational talent. Like, everybody wanted him. That's
yeah.
why people were tanking.
Yeah.
I, as a Spurs fan, I'm never going to get anybody to convince me that the league is rigging something for the Spurs.
Right.
Like, the league was not always happy about the dynasty that the Spurs created. Like, they tolerated it because they were so good.
Right.
But, like, if you look at how teams are marketed and things like that within the league, I mean, the Lakers are way higher than the Spurs on that. The Celtics, the Bulls, all those teams that had dynasties
right.
are pumped a lot more by the NBA than the Spurs ever were.
Oh,
and maybe
sure.
I'm just saying, I don't think I'm looking through my Spurs fan glasses on that. I think a lot of people back that up with comments that I see on social media and how they're talked about, because the Spurs weren't sexy and they're not a big market team.
Exactly.
And so I had somebody saying, well, the NBA wants the Spurs to get this pick. I saw that yesterday. I'm like, no, the NBA wants Houston to get this pick.
Yeah.
Second would be Detroit had they not gotten so many high picks already recently, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be the case. In a normal year, the pecking order of who the NBA wanted to have the pick would be Houston, Detroit, San Antonio, if you're picking between those three teams.
Right.
Now, when I saw Detroit was five, I started to get a little giddy.
Well, I'll tell you if you think it should have been rigged, Washington.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would Washington be a much bigger deal than San Antonio, Detroit, or even Houston.
Yeah.
Because you know everything on the East Coast and Washington, can you imagine?
The Jordan brand connection to Charlotte would have been better than San Antonio.
I thought about that too, and Charlotte got the number two pick last night. The Wizards fell down to eight. The Wizards were one ping pong ball away from getting it over the Spurs and then fell all the way to eight.
Mm-hmm.
So the Wizards were that close to changing their franchise for the future for forever.
Yeah.
If Wembanyama ends up being like LeBron. Because the Cavs, when they got LeBron, they knew that changes everything, and it did. And now the Spurs are going to benefit from the third time.
Well, Wembanyama changes how you go about everything you do as an organization,
Sure.
You want to win now if you got the dude.
Right.
You get the dude you wanted, then now you have a much better chance of getting some free agents that typically won't come to San Antonio to maybe listen to you and say, hey, we're going to we're doing it now. We're not waiting. We're not building through the draft anymore. We're doing it now.
It just speeds up the process of doing everything is what it does. So the Wizards get the – they were so close. And so if you think it's rigged, Washington would probably be the first choice, honestly. So anyway, Spurs get lucky again. I don't know if they sold their soul to the devil three times.
I was fully prepared not to get it, so I was very elated when it happened.
It's so weird. I think somebody mentioned yesterday about the lottery. I'd forgotten it was last night, and for some reason I was like, the Spurs will probably get it because I remember they got – and it just that's what crossed my mind was, oh, they'll probably get it, not thinking that seriously about it. And then all of a sudden I saw they did. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then everybody was mad about it, of course. All right, hockey in Kansas City. Well – voters in Tempe, Arizona have rejected all three measures for the Arizona Coyotes' $2.1 billion arena project. Per unofficial results, the team's future in Arizona is in jeopardy. And I say, there's T-Mobile Center there in Kansas City. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
That would be awesome, but I don't think Kansas City's at the top of the list of relocating, unfortunately. But I would be all for it. And we talked yesterday about the ACC, that half the schools in the ACC are talking about and exploring how unbreakable or how solid the grant of rights deal is, and perhaps they're not happy with the money they get, especially Florida State and Clemson. This came out yesterday by someone that's covering this down in that area in the ACC country, although I haven't seen anything that's been fully verified by this, but this is what he said. He says, just verified this with a colleague who will be reporting soon, that the Louisville Cardinals have become the eighth school to put the ACC's existence into serious jeopardy. Of course, that means the Big 12 has made the offer. Conference realignment is going down, and soon. Now, I haven't seen anybody else report that the Big 12 has made an offer to Louisville. Of course, back when the Big 12 could add BYU and Louisville, and then they didn't take Louisville when they knew they got Louisville, and they were trying to get BYU. And we said at the time, just take the one and then add another one later. They didn't, and Louisville's done very well since then. And that was the lack of leadership in this conference at the time. And that obviously Louisville, I think, would have been a good addition. And I'd be okay with Louisville joining the Big 12 if that's what the Brett Yormark thinks is best for the Big 12. But that was a report coming out down in ACC country that there's eight schools now, which means if there was a vote to try to get out of this thing, that you'd have eight of the 14, I guess. And then Notre Dame's kind of the so-called little bit of a 15th type of deal. And this affects Notre Dame, too, by the way. That's the big fallout of all this. What's Notre Dame going to do? Because are they going to just keep thinking they can be independent all the time? In this power structure situation, I don't think they can sit it out all the time. But it's all about money, as we said. But that's what this person thinks the Big 12 has offered Louisville.
Yeah, it just depends on how long the TV people think that Notre Dame still carries a brand, right? Like, if they can continue to be independent.
Right.
And NBC feels like they still carry a brand. So until NBC says they don't, that's how long Notre Dame's going to last as an independent, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it all comes down to for me, is somebody's going to have to stop giving them a grant of rights deal just to be Notre Dame.
Yes.
But Louisville, it was frustrating back when they should have already been in the Big 12. I mean,
yes,
that opportunity was there. It should have already been done.
Absolutely.
But
so we'll continue to follow the music carousel.
I do have one thing. Rock Hills Regional, I've been waiting on this announcement because the forecast is not good for tomorrow.
No.
It has been moved to Friday at 1 o'clock for the Rock Hills 1A Regional.
That's a good move.
Right now, all we know that we have tomorrow would be 2A at Valley Heights, and their forecast up there looks fine. I would guess that will stay 2A Valley Heights with Smith Center, but everybody else will be on Friday for regional track.
So the Rock Hills Regional is 1 o'clock Friday?
1 o'clock Friday afternoon.
Is the Beloit Regional? Or
theirs is at three in Nickerson on Friday.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it started later. All right. There you go. All latest local sports information, ncksports.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.